So maybe we'll take a few minutes just to review what we know, and then we'll go on.
Okay.
So we have two basic issues here in selling a base knesses, and again, it applies to selling a lot of other things as well, but there's one issue, what to do with the damim, and that's the lokeach's issue when he... I mean to say the mocher's issue, when he sells the Beit Knesset and he receives payment. And that's where our Mishnah has this restrictions called Milan B'Kodesh. So he's got to invest that money in something of a higher level of Kedusha. And then we have another issue which seems to be independent and maybe works with its own regulations, and that's what does Lokech do with the Beis HaKnesses? And we raise the possibility that even if the sale is valid, and even if the, in certain cases, and that's going to be Rava's discussion here on Chavav, the mocher is allowed to use those damim even to buy beer, drink beer, whatever it might be, but nevertheless, the Beit Knesset might still retain its sanctity. So that's something that we want to get back to. And we quoted a Gemara on Daf Chavav Amid Beis, Chav Zayin Amid Beis, excuse me, with the Mishnah there, that the Mishnah establishes in the name of the Chachamim that even after the sale of the Beis HaKnesses, there are four categories of activities that are prohibited in the Beis HaKnesses. And the Mishnah mentions Merchatz, Bursaki, Tvila, Beis HaMayim. So we see that even though there is a sale and we're validating the sale, nevertheless, the buyer is not allowed to do whatever he wants. He doesn't have carte blanche to do whatever he wants with the Beis HaKnesses, and he's going to be limited in four ways. So that's what we're going to get into today. Let's just review quickly the hierarchy that the Mishnah sets up. The lowest level is Rechova Shel Ir. And we said that that's not exclusively dedicated the whole year round on a permanent, regular basis for tefillah. And they only use it on tainios, mamados. And that became a subject of the machlokes here between Rabbi Nachum and the Chachamim on Daf Chavav Amid Aleph. That was the first gemara that we did here. Then from the level of Merchatz, we go up to the level of level of Rechova Shel Ir, we go up one level to Beis HaKnesses. Then we go up to the level of Teva. We weren't exactly sure whether the Teva was the Aron Kodesh, or maybe it was the Shulchan upon which they read the Sefer Torah. Then we go up to the next level, which is Mitpachos, that are covering the Sefer Torah. And that's an even higher level than the Teva, because the Teva is really just a wooden container, a box, you know, in which you put the Sefer Torah. But this is already the Me'il, the Mitpachat is actually directly touching the Sefer Torah. It has even a higher level of sanctity. And then from Mitpachot, we go to the higher levels of Sfarim and Sefer Torah. Sfarim, we said, were Nevi'im and Ksuvim. And we mentioned just superficially that there's going to be an issue where the Nevi'im and Ksuvim are on the same level, because the Mishnah doesn't differentiate between the two, sort of lumps them together. And then from Sifrei Nevi'im and Ksuvim, we go up to the level of a Sefer Torah, and that seems to be the highest level. And now, if you sell a Sefer Torah, which is the highest level, you can't go down a level. So you wouldn't be able to take the damim that you received in lieu of the sale of a Sefer Torah and invest it into Nevi'im Uksuvim. Or if you sold the Sifrei Nevi'im Uksuvim, to invest it into Mitpachos, because that's a low level. And from Mitpachos into Teva, and Teva into Beis Knesset into Rechova Ir.
Good. So that means, therefore, you can buy something equal to...
So that, we said, was a gigantic controversy. And back in this, you know, the Sialkut of Yerudah goes back and forth on this issue. The Reisha seems to assume you have to go up a Madriga. The Sefer seems to assume you can't go down a Madriga. So what's Meshava Meshava? You know,
yeah.
That's what's called in the language of Shas. They usually call that Diyukim Sosrim. You know, you have a Dayuk from the Reisha to exclude this case. You have a Dayuk from the Sefer to exclude that case. And you're left with this ambiguity in the middle case. So that was the first sugya that we did, and then we got up to Amar Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmeni. So what was the story with Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmeni, which is, I think, the last piece of Gemara that we saw on Thursday? The distinction between two categories of Beis HaKnesses. And this is a very, very profound sugya, that very complicated, between Beis Knesset Shel Kfarim, which seems to be like a private ownership kind of thing. In other words, Gemara is going to give an example of certain workers, and you know, they belong to one guild, you know, to one union, and they had their own Beis Knesset. Or in the case of Kfarim in general, where I guess it's not open to the public in the classic sense. I mean, people don't come in. There are no great market days, no fairs. And that's what our Mishnah says Reb Shmuel is all about. And our Mishnah is predicated on the heter, the permission to sell a Beis Knesset. And that you could do in a Beis Knesset Shel Kfarim. Then he says, but a Beis Knesset Shel Krochim you cannot sell. And the reason for that is Dehavile Derabim. And here we had a three-way machlokas, exactly how this operates. Is it Havile Derabim is more of a financial issue, that the people of the world who come in from other countries or other cities in the country, maybe they even invest in the Beis HaKnesset, they contribute to its building, we didn't know. And maybe therefore they became partners in the Beit Knesset. We had another explanation that when it was built al das the rabbim, and that itself gives it a high level of kedusha. And then we had various discussions that maybe we can talk about a reality of a Beis Knesset Shel Krochim, which is a gigantic Beit Knesset and gigantic metropolis, and yet it still has the status of a Beit Knesset Shel Kfarim under certain conditions. Then the Gemara told us a story about Rav Ashi, that when they built the Beis Knesset in Mata Machasya, they had in mind the Rav Ashi, he would determine whether or not, when and if and when they would sell the Beit HaKnesset. And therefore, if he decided, Rav Ashi, that he would sell the Beit HaKnesset, he had rights to do so. And we were assuming that Mata Machasya is a metropolis of some sort, it's a Beit Knesset of Rabbim. But yet, since the Rabbim built it with the mindset that Rav Ashi would be in charge, he would be in the driver's seat, that would be enough to give him the rights. They sort of forfeited the rights, or maybe they changed the nature of the Kedusha, and it became like a Beit Knesset Shel Kfarim.
Which does imply that you can put a Tanai, like you can make conditions in when
correct.
You set up the...
Absolutely, and that's something that I'm hoping we'll get to today as we go along. And just one last note on the last Gemara about Rav Ashi. Once again, we have another controversy. This Gemara is full of machlokas, and on every point there's going to be a controversy. He has a controversy here between the Ran and the Rambam about this. They call it a Beit Knesset Shebanu Oso Al Das HaYochid, and the Yochid here in this Gemara was Rav Ashi. So here we have machlokas between the Ran and the Rambam. The Ran says that even when Rav Ashi sells the Beit Knesset, he says he still needs to have what's called the Mamad Anshei Ha'ir. So that's interesting. Mm-hmm. Rav Ashi is going to make the decision, but somehow he needs either the tacit agreement, we don't know, but some sort of agreement to the Anshei Ha'ir.
Right.
And the Rambam, on the other hand, takes it to the extreme. He says if they built this Beit Knesset al das Yochid, Yochel is limochro, afilu below as kamas b'nei ha'ir. He doesn't need anyone's okay. That was built on his das. And the Shulchan Aruch paskins that he can sell it b'has kamas ha'tzibur, which sounds like the Mishnah Berurah is accepting the Ran's approach, that even the Yochid here, Rav Ashi, who is put in the driver's seat, even he needs to get the has kamas ha'tzibur. And in this footnote, he quotes the Mishnah Berurah in Siman Kuf Nun Gimel. Kuf Nun Gimel is the Siman of Beit Knesset. And he writes that im beferish toli b'das ha'yochid, if they made an explicit condition, then the Rambam is right, and you can sell the Beit Knesset whenever he wants to, this Rav Ashi, even below askamasam. But if it was only an understood agreement, they didn't say it explicitly, they didn't, you know, formulate it in words, then they still need the Haskama Satzibur.
Who has to formulate that? Because, I mean, I'm just thinking today, there is no...
Who are the trustees?
Right, who's the trustee of the city? Right. That's, you know, you have the trustees of the Beit Knesset, but there's no trustees of the city anymore.
Right. The language that I see over and over again here in the Masifta, at least, in, both in his translation and in his footnotes, is Banu Es, etc. You know, Banu. He just says Banu, they built. Banu et Beit HaKnesset al Data Yachid, Banu et Beit HaKnesset al Data Rabim. He doesn't say who this Banu is, you know. Who, he's not talking about the Kablan, I don't think.
Right.
Okay, so we're up to now a Gemara that starts with Meisvei. Let's see if we can find the exact place. Oh, wait a minute, do we do Beit Knesset? This is a Gemara I think we may have touched on, but I'm not sure if we did it inside. It's exactly parallel to Ritzua, to Tosu Ritzua. So the Gemara now is going to ask Akasha on Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmeni. Morning, Asher. Mamish just started this. You know, I mean, until now we've been sort of reviewing what we did on Thursday.
Okay, good.
So the Gemara quotes now a brisa of Rabbi Yehuda. Of Rabbi Yehuda, Maisa beis Knesset shall tursiim, and we said that these are people that are involved in some sort of a work that gives off an odor. So they weren't such welcome guests in the membership of other synagogues.
This defines it as copper refiners.
Right, sorfei, in Hebrew it's called sorfei nechoshes, in English it's called copper refiners. Shehoyu b'Yerushalayim, Yerushalayim is a big city, and shemachru, and they actually sold it. Rabbi Eliezer, they sold it to Rabbi Eliezer, v'osaba kol tzrachav. In other words, the sale was apparently valid. Nobody questioned even Rabbi Eliezer on the receiving end accepted and validated this sale, and that seems to undermine the whole shita of Rabbi Yonasan or Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmeni in his name. After all, that particular Beit Knesset was in Yerushalayim, and if it was built in Yerushalayim, to krochim hava, it has the status of a Beit Knesset of a metropolis, which we said that cannot be sold. So the Gemara answers that even in Yerushalayim, you know, it's what determines whether it's Krochim or Kfarim, or Krochim does not hinge only solely on the size of the city or the large nature of the Beit Knesset. None of that is. But rather you could have a Beit Knesset in a large city and it still has the halachic status of a Beit Knesset shel Kfarim. Hahi Beit Knishta Zutei Havi. And he translates zute, I don't know, your translation may be different. Zute means that it was limited for a certain particular population. The inu of duhu.
This says small.
Small, right? So I'm afraid that if we take the word small too literally, we're going to get a little, you know, sort of...
Well, this cites the Ritva saying, and I'm saying that there was a larger Beit Knesset in Yerushalayim at the time. So therefore, this wasn't built for the world at large. That the other one was.
Oh, so once again, I think even the Ritva is—he's saying we're not taking a measuring. You know, what do they call it in English? A meter. You know, and we're measuring exactly the size of the Beit Knesset. I think it all depends upon who the Beit Knesset is designated for. So another Beit Knesset in Yerushalayim was designated for the populace at large. Maybe it was a larger synagogue, but I don't think that's the final determining factor. This Beit Knesset of the Tursium, that was limited and built for this population. It was earmarked for these people.
There's a really small Beit Knesset in the Shuk, but it clearly is open for everybody. And you know,
so
always, like,
it might have a
din
of a Beit Knesset.
So, right, but it's tiny, but it's... But it's open to the public. I mean, they're always trying to get people to come.
I think I once was there. Okay, so now we get into a bit of a more complicated sugya. And this whole sugya is being brought because of a diuk in a brisa. And this diyuk in a brayso is also going to undermine the shita of Rabbi Yonasan or Rabbi Shmuel. And this brayso is dealing with a pasuk in Tumas Negayim, and specifically what's called Nigei Batin. Right, we have three categories of Tumas Negayim. One is Nigei Aguf, the other is Nigei Batim, and then we have Nigei Kelim. So in the case of a Nigei Bias, where you find a Nega in the Bias, and at the, ultimately if you Matami the Bias, you need Netitzo, you have to break down the house. So the opening pasuk in this parasha reads the following: Ki Savo El Eretz Knan Asher Anino Sein Lachem La'achuza. So the first condition here in Tumas Nigei Batim is that it's got to be in Eretz Canaan. But number two, the pasuk says Achuza, and the Torah repeats this for extra emphasis. It says Menasati Nega Tzaras Bebeis Eretz Achuzaschem, and the Achuzaschem is written in the possessive grammatical form. Now, this pasuk appears in Vayikra Yudalit. And the Gemara now, in this brisa, darshins the word achuzaschem. Achuzaschem indicates some sort of private ownership. Now, when I say private ownership, I don't mean private ownership in the sense that it belongs just to one person, one Reuven. You could have what's called shutafut, right? You could have partnership, and it belongs to Reuven and Shimon. In fact, you could have a partnership, it belongs to the entire Shevet. So the ownership of a Shevet, when we divvy up the land, is considered private ownership in our context, and it still fills the requirement of achuzaschem. The only exception to achuzaschem, which is being excluded by this pasuk and doesn't lend itself to Tumas Negayim, is an area that's not owned by any, doesn't have any element of private ownership. It's the absolute public ownership. And that is Achuzaschem Metam Binagoyim V'ein Yushalayim Metam Binagoyim. That Yushalayim, according to this opinion, was not divvied up amongst the Shvatim. It was left out of the Chalukas Eretz Yisrael L'Nachla. And it's owned by all of Klal Yisrael as an entity, as a corporate entity that spans all generations. And therefore it doesn't fill the requirement of Achuzaschem. So one advantage of living in Yerushalayim is you don't have to worry about Tumas Negayim. Hopefully there are other advantages as well. Am Rav Yehuda, ani lo shamati, I never heard this exclusion of Tumas Negayim, Ella, but only with regard to Makom HaMikdash Bilvad. With regard to the Makom HaMikdash, we have a halacha that designated location within Yerushalayim, but it's a very specific location, that belongs to all of Klal Yisrael. And there's no private ownership. But as far as Yerushalayim is concerned, Rabbi Yehuda insists that Yerushalayim itself was divided up amongst the Shvatim. We'll see that it was divided between Yehud and Binyamin. We'll get into that a little bit later on. But here we have a very interesting sugya in Masechta Yuma, which I want to call to your attention. Rashi makes reference to it. And the Gemara in Yuma has a separate miut to exclude the Makom HaMikdash. Now, our Gemara here, Masechta Megillah, excludes the Makom HaMikdash because it's not called Achuzaschem. And apparently because the Beis HaMikdash and its location is public property. However, the Gemara in Yuma derives it from a different pasuk. And that is, see, we're looking at in Vayikra Yudalid at Pasuk Lamed Dalit. But if you look at the very next Pasuk, Lamed Hey, it says, Uba Asher Lo Habayis, which means the Kohen goes in to see the person who owns a house. And the Gemara Darshan says that the extra word Lo is called lechol tzrachav, which means that he has a house and the halacha permits him to use the house in any way, shape, or form that he wants to. And this means that the house doesn't have kedusha to it, doesn't have sanctity, which would curb the activities he's allowed to perform within inside the house. And the Gemara says that this comes to exclude the Beis HaMikdash, because the Beis HaMikdash is not low, it's not L'chol Tzrachov. There are very strict laws and restrictions about what he's allowed to do inside the Beis HaKnesses. So this Rashi, Divramascha Lo Shamati, seems to indicate that the exclusion of Beis HaMikdash is based on Echuzaschem, meaning that although Yerushalayim was divided up, but the Beis HaMikdash was not. We're going to soon see later that David HaMelech, when he went to this Goren, and Atada Goren, and he purchased the land for the Beis HaMikdash, he collected money from all the Shvatim, Goren Arona, it's called, HaYevusi, he was a Yevusi, and that indicates that the Makom HaMikdash belongs to everyone. It doesn't belong to any particular Shevet. That's why David HaMelech went out of his way to collect 50 shekel, whatever amount he collected from each one of the Shvatim. But yet the Gemara in Yuma seems to invoke a different halacha here. And the reason why Beis HaMikdash is excluded is not because it's publicly owned, and when I say public, I mean Knesset Yisrael, but rather because it's not low. It's not low avayis, it's not l'chol tzrachav. There's an Iser Kedusha that severely restricts what activities we're allowed to perform within the Beis HaMikdash. So B'li Neder, I hope either today or tomorrow we'll come to some reconciliation as to why our Gemara bases it on Achuzaschem and the Gemara Yuma derives the same halacha from Asher Lo Habayis. There seem to be two elements here, two dimensions in the exclusion of Tumas Negoim from the Beis HaMikdash. One is that it's not privately owned, not even owned by a Shevet, and the other is because it has Kedusha to it, and that Kedusha deflects Tumas Negoim, makes it impossible for Tumas Negoim. And as we said before, Tumas Negoim culminates in breaking down the house. We're not going to break down the Beis HaMikdash because of Tumas Negoim. Okay. So that's what we have so far. Now the Gemara uses this Braisa as a kasha on Rabbi Yonasan. Why? Because let's be medayik in the words of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says that if there's a problem of achuzaschem to exclude a public area, it excludes Yerushalayim. Now, I'm sorry, that was the Tanakhama. And Rabbi Yehuda says the pasuk achuzaschem excludes the Beis HaMikdash. But if we go back to the Tanakhama says that all of Yerushalayim is excluded, and Rabbi Yehuda limits this exclusion to the Makom HaMikdash. So the Gemara asks the following question: Habatik Nesius Ubatik Midrashos Mitamim. It sounds like, according to Rabbi Yehuda, as opposed to the Tanakhama, all of Yerushalayim, with the single exception of the Makom HaMikdash, is Makabel Tumas Negoim. Well, all of Yerushalayim includes, apparently, again, by process of elimination, if you're only eliminating Beis HaMikdash, then all the Batei Knesset and Batei Yerushalayim in Yerushalayim are mitamim. There is tuma and tumas negoim in a Beis HaKnesses. This is going to be a big question on Rabbi Yonasan. Hadekrachim havu. In other words, the Gemara is assuming that every synagogue in Yerushalayim. Well, again, we had before the exception of the Tarsim, but as a general rule, every synagogue in Yerushalayim is a public area. It's not owned privately, and it doesn't lend itself to Mechira. And if it doesn't lend itself to Mechira, according to Rabbi Yonasan, then how could it be Metami Tumas Negoim? And the Gemara, based on this question, is going to have to sort of rewrite the text over here. We're going to have to change the Braisa and its meaning. Emo, we're going to have to suggest, is Om Rabbi Yehuda, Ani lo shamati ela mokom mikudosh bilvad. And we're going to rewrite Rabbi Yehuda in a way that he was excluding not just the mokom HaMikdash, But any makom that's mekudosh, that's sanctified, like a Beis HaKnesses and a Beis HaMedrash. And I'm just thinking out loud here, and I think his translation will support what I'm about to say, that the Gemara is now shifting from Achuzaschem to Asher Lo HaBayis, meaning Achuzaschem would exclude a Beis HaKnesses because it is
not owned.
It is not privately owned. But now the Gemara is introducing a whole other element into the equation, and that's Mekudosh. You know, we can't destroy something that has sanctity to it, even if it has what normally would be considered and classified as Tumas Negayim. And the add-on of the word Mekudosh here would be reflective of what we saw from the Gemara in Yuma, that the reason why a Beis HaKnesses is excluded, or a Beis HaMikdash is excluded, is because it's Asher Lo, that you only find Tumas Negayim when it's Miyuchad L'Shimush L'Chol Tzarchav. But here it's not Miyuchad L'Shimush T'Chol Tzarchav insofar as it has Kiddusha. So once again, the Gemara seems to be operating on two different levels here, that one level is the ownership, and that's going to exclude Mechira, as we said before, in the case of something that's owned by all of Klal Yisrael. And on another level, it's Mekudosh. The fact that it was designated for all of Klal Yisrael gives it a higher level of Kiddusha. And certainly in the case of Mokom HaMikdash, that's understood, but now we're expanding it to include Batei Knesios B'Yerushalayim, Batei Knesios of Krachim, which now are Mekudosh for all of Klal Yisrael. This reminds you of the Gemara. The Gemara says in Masechta Brachos that a Beis HaKnesses is Me'ein Beis HaMikdash. It's a Mikdash Ma'ad. It's a sort of a microcosm of a Beis HaMikdash.
Just all the Batei Knesset that have been coming to Yerushalayim.
Right, that's what we're waiting for. So at this point, the Gemara is going to go into a whole discussion about whether Yerushalayim was divided up amongst the Shvatim or not. But I want to hold that off for just another minute. There's a question here that almost all the Rishonim ask on our sugya. The Gemara quotes the Brisa of Rabbi Yehuda as a question on Rabbi Yonasan. Well, what about the Tanakhama? The Tanakhama excluded all of Yerushalayim. Wouldn't that support Rabbi Yonasan? Because if all of Yerushalayim is excluded, then doesn't that reflect the fact that the Batei Knesios in Yerushalayim have the status of Krachim?
It also excludes all the homes.
Excellent, good. So that's what the Rashba says, that even the Tanakhama here would not really help us, because the Tanakhama would exclude all of Yerushalayim, not just the Batei Knesios. And that the Gemara now is about to embark upon a study, that all of Yerushalayim is publicly owned, so to speak, right? It's lo nischalka l'shvatim. It was never divided up amongst the Shvatim. That doesn't really support Rav Yonasan, because Rav Yonasan's point, his chiddush, was that a Beis Knesset shel Krachim also gains that status, and that would apply anywhere in the world. That's not true, because the Tanakhama is only excluding Yerushalayim insofar as it wasn't nischalka l'shvatim. One other point that I wanted to share with you here is there's a pasuk in Yechezkel that says the following. And this pasuk in Yechezkel is going to support what we said before, that any place that's Mekudosh, which includes Batei Knesios or Batei Midrashos, is excluded from Tumas Negayim because of its Kedusha. It says, Ki yirchaktim bagoyim, v'chi hafitzosim ba'aratzos, ve'ehi lohem l'migdash mi'at bi'aratzos asher bo'u shom. And basically the Navi is telling us that we will be sent into Golus, far away from the Beis HaMikdash, but even ba'aratzos asher bo'u shom, in those countries, in those areas where you will enter, there will be a Migdash Ma'at. And the Ritva makes a big deal here in quoting this pasuk in Yechezkel, because he says, this was invoking the Gemara that we mentioned earlier, Batei Knesios u'Batei Midrashos kriyim migdash ma'at. So they have a partial status of a migdash. Maybe they don't have the full-fledged Kedusha, But there's certainly a whole list of activities which we're not allowed to engage in inside of Beis HaKnesses. And, you know, there's a mitzvah Mora Migdash, and the mitzvah Mora Migdash applies even to a Beis HaKnesses. According to some Rishonim, that's Doraisa. I'm not saying that we all Rishonim agree to that. Okay, now at this particular juncture in our sugya, we're going to have to get into a little bit of a map here about the Mokom HaMikdash on Har Moriah, which is called Har Abayis. There was a place on Har Moriah which was designated for the Beis HaMikdash, and that area was part of the Chelek of Shevet Yehuda, if we assume that Yerushalayim Nischalka L'Shvatim.
Thought it was
Binyamin. Oh, yeah. So we're going to see that there's another area that's designated for Binyamin, and then there's going to be a... Okay, let's go through the Gemara inside. I know you have all these pictures here that I have, these diagrams. Oh, you have the diagrams too. Okay. So Gemara says as follows, but my come miflugi, what's the machlokas here between the Tanakam and Rabbi Yehuda? The Tanakam excludes all of Yerushalayim. Why is that? As far as Tumas to go, Tanakama Sabah Shalom is Chalka Yerushalayim L'Shvatim, that Yerushalayim was never included in the original Chalukas Eretz Yisrael, and it was never divided up. It was excluded from the Goral, you know, from the lottery in which they divvied up the land of Israel to all the Shvatim. For Rabbi Yehuda Savar Nischalka Yerushalayim L'Shvatim, that even Yerushalayim was divvied up amongst the Shvatim, and we'll soon see exactly which Shvatim. And therefore, if you take a look at a bias in Yerushalayim according to Rabbi Yehuda, not a Mokom HaMikdash, or a Mokom HaMikudash, I should say, but if it's not Mikudash, then it is privately owned, and therefore will be Metami Tumas Negoyim. And that Machlokas itself is Biplugta Dahani Tanoi. So we started with Machlokas Chachom Rabbi Yehuda, and now we're going to have another Machlokas Tanoim, which hinges on this question about whether Yerushalayim was divided up in the Chalukas Eretz Yisrael. The Sanya, we learned in the Braisa, Ma Hoye Bechelko Shel Yehuda. Now according to this Tanakama, Yerushalayim was divided up into the Shvatim, and therefore Yehuda receives on the Har Abayis parts of the Beis HaMikdash, not the entire Mokom HaMikdash. He receives the Har Abayis, the Lishakos, the Azaros, and all these are on the Tzad HaMizrachi of the Beis HaMikdash. So we're going to divide up the Beis HaMikdash into two sides. One side is called the Eastern side, and the eastern side had the Azarot and the Lishakot. Now what are the Azarot? Why is it in plural? There were three Azarot. There's the Ezras Noshim, there's the Ezras Yisrael, and then there's the Ezras Kohanim. Now the Ezras Kohanim is what we normally call, in Kodshim, we call it the Azara. That's where the Mizbeach stood. Again, we haven't entered into the Heichal yet, you know, where there was the Mizbeach HaPnimi. Now we're in the Mizbeach HaChitzon. Now what's common to all these three Azarot is the size. The size is 135 square Amma. And that's true for the Ezras Noshim. Now, in the case of the Ezras Yisrael, where the Jews were allowed to enter into, even though they weren't Kohanim, I mean, Goyim were excluded at some point, but he says the following. The Orech was 135 Amma, which we saw in the case of the Ezras Noshim as well. However, the Rochav was only 11 Amma. So that the size of the Ezras Yisrael was a fraction of the size of the Ezras Noshim. Mm-hmm. Keep in mind, the Ezras Noshim, it had some element of Kedusha, but you know, it's sort of reminiscent of the Rehov HaShalir that we spoke about. It had the lowest rung. Even Goyim were allowed to enter into the Ezras Noshim. And then we get to the Ezras Kohanim. Now the Ezras Kohanim was between the Ezras Yisrael up to the Mizbeach. It was 130 Amma in Rochav, in width, on 11 Amma in in by 11 Am. Now, all these three Azaros were in the Chelek of Yehuda, according to this Tanakama the Braisa. Now, he points out that there's something around the Beis HaMikdash, which is a gigantic mechitza, and actually there were two different mechitzos. One mechitza was relatively low, and that was called the Soreg, and that was the wider mechitza that encompassed the entire Makom HaMikdash. And then from the Soreg up until the wall of the Beis HaMikdash, I'm sorry. Let me go that over that again. I'll read it once more. Saviv lebeis hamigdash, there was a mechitza gvoa asar tefachim hinei kreis soreg. So that surrounds the Beis HaMikdash itself. And then when you leave the Beis HaMikdash area, then you're in an area that takes you all the way to the end of the Harbayis, and the Harbayis itself was surrounded by another wall, another choma. And from the Choma of the Harabayis until the Soreg, which is the area of the Beis HaMikdash and included the Azoras and the Lashakos, that was 10 Amos. Now he has a whole discussion here from a Masechta Kelim about what this area was allowed, what was not allowed. That means the 10 Amos between the Harabayis and the entry into the Makom HaMikdash past the Soreg. Okay, fine. Oh, this area, by the way, has another name to it. It's called the Chel. And the Chel was also the home of the Lishakos. And you have to know more about the details here because it's only Eser Amos. I don't know how they fit everything in. That's a discussion here. Okay. Now, how is the area of the Beis HaMikdash divided up? So we have now the area which is all the way up to the Mizbeach, and include the Mizbeach. So you have the Harabayis, and then you go 10 Amos into the to the Ezras Noshim. From the Harabayis to the Ezras Noshim, you have the Lishakos. They were located in the Chel, which is called that 10 Amos between the Chomas Harabayis and the Soreg. Then you entered past the Soreg into the Azaros, one Azor after the other, three different Azaros, Ezras Noshim, Ezras Yisrael, and then the Ezras Kohanim, and all this belonged to Shevet Yehuda according to the Tanakhama. Uma hoya bechelko shel Binyamin. So on the Makom HaMikdash, what did Binyamin get? Ulam is the area between the Mizbeach and the Heichal, and then he has the Heichal. And then beyond the Heichal is the Beis Kodesh Kadoshim. And this is all on the Tzad Ma'aravi of the Beis HaMikdash. So Yehud is on the Tzad Mizrahi, and Binyamin is on the Tzad Ma'aravi. So we're going from east to west. Then the Braisa tells us, and this is going to get Binyamin a little bit upset, that there was a Ritzuah. A ritzua means a strip. Whenever you see the word ritzua, it's usually a rochav of one ama. Hayotzeis michelko shel Yehuda. So again, the chelik of Yehuda went all the way up, going from east towards the west, up to and including the Ezras Kohanim. But from the chelik of Yehuda, there was a strip that went into, cut into the Mizrach, into the territory of Binyamin. V'nichneses bechelko shel Binyamin v'mizracho shel Mizbeach. So this is on the eastern side of the Mizbeach, which really technically belongs to Binyamin, but yet it was designated for Shevet Yehuda. So you have a couple of pictures here on the bottom. Let me see if we can explain this. He says the following. The Braisa really doesn't go into detail about exactly where this Ritzuah was located. He says the following, Ritzuah shel Yehuda nichnas l'tochelko shel Binyamin mi-mizrach ha-mizbeach. So we're going towards the east. That's already off limits for Rabbi Yehuda. But he gets this strip of land, which is one amah in width. Kol ha-shetach shivzbeach omer olav nofil b'chelko shebinyamin. So the wall of the Mizbeach on the eastern side was the final territory of Yehuda. So Yehuda stretches on the east until the wall of the Mizbeach. The wall of the Mizbeach already enters into the area of Shevet Binyamin. So let's say the land, the territory underneath the Mizbeach belonged to Binyamin, with one exception. Chutz miritzua acha shel Yehuda shenichnas alutoch chelko shel Binyamin. And he says that according to Rashi, mevur kan b'Rashi sheritzua zu hoisa rak b'mizracho shel Mizbeach. So on the eastern side of the Mizbeach there was a ritzua. Ulam hashetach shel tzfono uledromo shel Mizbeach beino levein pesach ulam kulo hoya shel binyam. So with the exception of this one strip, everything to the north and to the south of this strip belonged to Binyamin. And here he tells you to look at this picture over here. So he says, I'll try to decipher this and show it to you. He says that Binyamin is the white area. Okay, so that includes the Kodesh Kodashim and the Heichal. It also includes the Ulam. And that all belongs to Shevet Binyamin. Now, Shevet Yehuda, he says, looks a little bit like a darker area. Okay, it's not 100% clear to me. But anyway, here's the Mizbeach. And I'm not getting this clear. Maybe yours is a little clearer. I'm not so happy with this.
Ours has a little, the little strip around
right, because there's no cap.
The beginning
there's
of the
no episode.
Oh, we're going to get to that in a second.
There's no Yisod.
Right.
Because of that.
Because of the Shevet Yehud. Now he says that there seems to be a contradiction here between the way we understood this sugya according to Rashi here and the way Rashi seems to present this sugya in its original in Zvachim Nun Gimel and Beis. There it seems that the strip of Yehuda extended on both sides, so he got even Droma Shel Mizbeach, or at least on one side Droma Shel Mizbeach. Now the Mishnah in Mido says that in this area called Droma Shel Mizbeach there was no Yisod on the Mizbeach. And the reason for that is because it belonged to Yehuda. So apparently there's a long discussion here how to reconcile this with Rashi. Rashi seems to assume that both in the Dorom and in the Tzafot it belonged to Shevet Binyamin. Now the Yisod of Mizbeach was important. He doesn't go into it here. For what's called Shvichas Damim, you had what's called Shiori Adam. So part of the Dam was Nizrak Al Gavi Mizbeach, and the rest of the Dam, which is called Shirayim, which was received in a Mizrak in a Kli Shoris, that had to be poured onto the Yisod Mizbeach. Now there's something called a Chatas Pnimis, right, which is where the Zrikas Adam is on the Mizbeach HaPnimi, but yet the Shvichas Domim went out to the Mizbeach HaChitzon, and again there was a Shvichas Shirayim on the Yisod. But the issue is that on the eastern side there was no Yisod. So the Gemara has a whole machlokas. Which direction does he turn to? You know, on the other three areas. Okay, for that you have to learn Masech the Yuma, Masech the Zvachim. But now the Gemara gives an agadic statement here about Binyamin HaTzadik. Okay. Uba, okay, so we didn't read those words, Uba Mizbeach Banui, right? In this area, there was a Mizbeach. So now we have an area which technically belongs to Shevet Binyamin, but there was a strip where the Mizbeach was that belongs to Shevet Yehudah. Binyamin HaTzadik Mitztar Olei B'chol Yom Levola. In other words, Binyamin felt that he deserved to have the Mokom HaMizbeach completely, and on a daily basis he was waiting for the moment in which he could swallow up that area. Shenemar, at the end of the Torah, it says in Zos HaBrach, it says Chofef Alav Kol Hayom. The Gemara is interpreting Chofef means he's mitztayer. and he was upset. He has here a Rashi that Adam mitzar chofef umischachek bibgodav. He rubs his garment, I guess, out of nervous anxiety. So Binyom was mitzar that he didn't have the entire mizbeach in his chelek. Again, you have to know the deeper meaning of this, but we're just learning it right now on a superficial level. And this is so laudatory that Zocha Binyom and Asa Ushpizchin Lishkina. In other words, the Arna Kodesh, which is really on top of which were the Kruvim, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu was Mashir Shkina between the Kruvim on top of the Aron, and this was all part of the Kodesh Kadosh, and this was part of the Yushpezichon Lashkina. Yushpezichon means like a host for the Shkina. So Binyamin had this chelik, and he was Zochet to be the sole Shevet that had the ability, the merit of being the host for the Shekhinah. And again, as far as we're concerned, this ends the Braisa to establish that Yushalayim Nischalka L'Shvatim. This would support the opinion of the Tanakhama, who says that Yushalayim is Makabel Tumas Negoyim, because Yushalayim was in fact split up in the way that we defined it. Now, when it says here that Binyamin was the Yushpizchon Lishchina, so the Medrash says that Binyamin was the only Shevet other than Yosef that did not participate in the Mechir of Yosef. And therefore, the Achdus, HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want to be Mashre Shechina in a place where there's no Achdus. So Binyamin represents that element of Achdus. Now I have here a note about the size of the Mizbeach. The Mizbeach itself, if you include the Yesod on the bottom, the foundation of the Mizbeach, it's 32 Amah and 32 Amah. Umei Olav Haya Gufa Mizbeach. So the Mizbeach on top of the Yesod was 30 Amah square. So that's as far as the Mizbeach is concerned. Okay, fine. We mentioned that the Yisod doesn't go up to the eastern side. No. Okay, I'm not going to go through all these details here, but he has a Marsha. That's what I wanted to see. Hiksha Marsha. Hare mimashe nemar v'hoya mitztayer, mashma sheyodah b'nevuah. Again, this is Binyamin HaTzadik. He knew already with prophecy, Shekola Migdash Yir Bechelkush Chutzme Osa Amav Himkein Eich Omru Sherak Machmas Tsaro Zocha Shaya Aron Bechelko. In other words, even before the Tsar, it was already designated, and Binyamin knew that for Yehuda, that strip. So how can we say that there's a time paradox here, because we're saying that the reason why Binyamin was zochet to the Aron is because of the Tsar, but all the parts of the Beis HaMikdash were already divided up before the Tsar. The Tsar was after he received the Nevuah. So he quotes an answer. Let's see if we can just give me one more minute to see if we can get a picture of what the Marsha is bothered by. He says Binyamin yada rak sheha ulam veha hechal Ubeis Kodesh Kadoshim Yu Bechelko. Ubelo Tsaro, if not for his Tsar, Lohaya Kodesh Baruch Hu Gozer, Sheyeh HaOron Bebeis Kodesh Kadoshim. So this is fascinating. He's saying that the Kodesh Kadoshim could be used and designated for many different purposes to the exclusion of the Aron. There was no absolute requirement that the Kodesh Kadoshim would be the host of the Aron. And therefore the Aron could have been placed in some area that belonged to Chelek Yehuda. So the only thing that was predetermined was that Binyamin would get he would receive the base Kodesh Kadoshim, but that doesn't mean he would definitely get the Aron. V'al yidei tzaro, zocha shiyo Aron b'chelko. Again, he doesn't tell you exactly why this tzar is so powerful and so meaningful. He doesn't tell you why Mida Kenegin Mida, as a result, he gets the Aron in the Kodesh Kadosh, and that he doesn't tell you. Yeah, Eric, you were going to ask me something.
No,
all right. Anyway, just to get that out of the way, now we get to the other opinion, because so far we only have one opinion that reflects the Chachamim. Now we want to see an opinion that could reflect Rabbi Yehuda. V'haytana, sovra lo nischalka Yushalayim l'shvatim. The Sanya, we have a brisa that rejects this idea that Yushalayim was divvied up. Ein maskirim batim v'Yushalayim. Mipnei she'enam shalahem. Unbelievable. Yushalayim doesn't belong to anybody.
I have to pay my rent.
Right. Now, I have a question here, which maybe your source material will... I can't find anything in the Masifta on this. If Yerushalayim was not Nischalka, is the Gemara going on to say that there's no private ownership in Yerushalayim? I can't begin to understand that. I mean, there's a whole discussion about whether you can rent out homes in Yerushalayim, but surely there was a Kenyan Chazaka on those who lived in Yerushalayim. You know, no one could come in and evict them from the houses. There must have been a ta'alich, some sort of a procedure of Kenyan. So what kind of Kenyan was it? You know, this reminds me of something called Tfusa Sabayis. I don't know if you ever heard that, you know, when someone dies and he leaves Karka for Yerusha, so there are two stages. You know, there's one stage where they divvy up the land into different sections, and then that's before they assign each section to one of the various yorshim, the heirs, and then finally each one of the yorshim makes his final kinyan on that area that was designated for him. So what's the status in that middle period of time before they actually made the kinyan? It was just designated. So it seems that I'm not learning Yesh Nochlin, but what I remember from my childhood is that none of the brothers could sell their chelek, but on the other hand, there was shvach, there was some increment in the value of the karka, or the karka produced the fruits or whatever, and that would accrue to that particular person, even though he hasn't made his kinyan. All I'm trying to say is that you have a concept of a kinyan that's not a complete kinyan. So I'm wondering, I'm thinking out loud, because unless you can show me something here, I'm totally lost here. On the one hand, we're saying you can't rent out the house in Yerushalayim, which means it doesn't belong to you. In fact, we're going to see a whole discussion if I can rent out the metaltolin in the house. But the house itself, I can't rent out to anyone. So obviously my ownership is very limited. And what impinges on my ownership? The fact that Yerushalayim lo nischalka l'shvatim. But yet there is private ownership. So we have to find some sort of...
This ties the Chazon Ish.
If the Chazon Ish was bothered by a question, I'll be very happy, because we're in good company.
He explains that initially Yerushalayim was apportioned among the tribes, since at the time the eventual site of the Beit HaMikdash wasn't known. And later, when Yerushalayim was designated as the home of the Beit HaMikdash, equal access was granted to all the tribes. But it's only in that narrow sense that this Tana is holding that Yerushalayim was not apportioned among the tribes. But really, the original owners of property, i.e. the members of Yehuda and Binyamin, retained title to their properties. The rest of Israel merely received the right to use these properties when they were visiting during the Regal.
This is a pretty revolutionary Chazon Ish, and I can tell you that not everyone accepts the Chazon Ish. What bothered the Chazon Ish here? Now, there's a question historically if the Chazon Ish was a Baki in Tanakh or not. But in this case, he certainly knew the Tanakh. There are many psukim in Tanakh which indicate that Yehuda and Binyamin had ownership over Yerushalayim. For example, he quotes a pasuk in Yoshua. It says, "Vesayivusi Yoshua Yerushalayim lo yochlu bnei Yehuda lahorishon." And we're specifically talking about Yerushalayim. There's another pasuk, also in Sefer Yoshua, with regard to the Chalukas Nachlos. And there, once again, it says that Yerushalayim was included in the Chalukas Nachlos. Then the Chazon Ish has another question. He says that at the time that they divided up the land of Israel, they didn't even know which was going to be the Makom HaMikdash and which Chiluk would apply to Eretz Yisrael and Yerushalayim. So it seems that Yerushalayim was included in the Chalukas. So anyway, he goes on and on and on here with proofs. And therefore he reinterprets, what does it mean, lo nischalkel Yushalayim, that somehow they limited the schus of the shimush of anybody who got his chelik in Yushalayim. But as I said before, this Chazon Ish is very revolutionary. Let's go back to the Braisa. Ein maskirim batim b'Yushalayim. We don't allow renting out homes in Yushalayim, b'nei eino shalahem, because those who live in Yushalayim do not have total ownership. And Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, Omer aflo mitos. Even the metaltalin in Yerushalayim were not privately owned. So I can't even rent out a bed in my house in Yerushalayim. And then the Gemara is going to say that if you stay in my home, you have to owe me what's called the Tovus Hanoi. You have to, this is more of an ethical principle. You have to give me some sort of a gift. So there were certain parts of the Kodshim that if somebody, let's say he was Ola Regal and he brought his own Karbon, his Karbon Nedava, he would allow the Oros and so forth and so on to go over to the Ushpizin, meaning to the host. So Bleed tomorrow we'll get into this a little bit more in detail. We'll stop here. Make a note of where we got to, and I wish you all a great day. Amen. Thank you so much. I still have this piece to learn with you, but I'm looking for the right moment, on the sale of Beis HaKadosh.